Welcome to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Today, Newark continues to celebrate the first Oscar win for actor Michael B. Jordan for his dual role as brothers Smoke and Stack in the vampire thriller Sinners.
I want to thank Warner Brothers. I want to thank Mike and Pam for believing in this dream, this vision of Ryan Coogler.
I'll chat with jazz power couple Equa and Ade Steve Coulson about their latest album and an upcoming event at Town Hall in New York City.
The arts allow your imagination to be a part of the product.
The young people, even now, really need, you know, the study of the arts.
And WBGO's John Kalish has the second part of his series on the Jazz Society of Fairfield County.
The key figure in Westport's growing jazz scene is Greg Wall, an Orthodox rabbi who also happens to be a professional jazz musician.
All this coming up today on the WBGO Journal. What a night for actor Michael B. Jordan. The 2005 Arts High School graduate took home his first Oscar for the lead dual role in the 2025 vampire horror film Sinners.
I've been all over this world. I've seen men die in ways I ain't even know was possible. Love you, brother. Be careful. I will.
The announcement came from two-time Oscar-winning actor Adrian Brody.
And the Oscar goes to Michael B. Jordan.
During his acceptance speech at the 98th Academy Awards ceremony in L.A., televised by ABC, the 39-year-old Jordan, who was raised in Newark and began acting at the age of 12, thanked all those who have supported him during his career.
Yeah, mama, what's up? Y'all know how I feel about my mother and my father's here. Your pops, where you at? My dad came in from Ghana. He flew in from Ghana to be here. My brother, my sister's here, my family. I want to thank Warner Brothers. I want to thank Mike and Pam for believing in this dream, this vision of Ryan Coogler, and betting on a culture, and betting on original ideas and original artistry. And I'm going to keep stepping up, and I'm going to keep being the best version of myself I could be. So I just want to say thank you for everybody in this room that had something to do with my success. I love you guys. And everybody at home who supported Sinners, who went to go see the movie once, twice, three, four, five times, thank you. Because you guys made this movie what it is. I love you. I love you. I love you.
Following Jordan's Best Leading Actor win, Newark School Superintendent Roger Leone released a statement saying Michael B. Jordan has inspired countless kids from Newark to work hard. Leone also praised Michael's mother, Donna, and his teachers, including drama teacher Carl Gonzalez. Newark Mayor Raz Baraka also issued a statement saying Michael B. Jordan's first Oscar win for his powerful performance in Sinners is an incredibly proud moment for us in the city of Newark. He says it's a reminder what's possible when talent, hard work, and vision come together.
Clouds on a sunny day won't chase the sun away. It still abides above. You better believe it. I'm about you that way. Won't chase my love away. Still, I am here, my love, you better believe it. So many things have passed, I have often had to ask, where does my road lead me? I must pursue it. Yet no matter what has happened, you've been right there to get me through. So I can say it out loud, I won't desert.
Today, my guests are referred to as a musical power couple by the New York Times and early members of the famed AACM. We welcome pianist, composer, and educator Ade Steve Coulson and his wife, vocalist, composer, and educator Equa Coulson. Great to see you both again here on WBGO.
Hey.
Always a pleasure, Doug. Always with you.
An honor, for sure. Coming up on Friday, March 27th, at the Town Hall's Dr. Charlotte Frank Patron Lounge in New York City will be a special event. Composers Now holds its 23rd edition of Dialogues, the organization's signature performance and conversation series hosted by founding artistic director and Pulitzer Prize winner Tanya Leone. The night will feature my guests today. Now, Ade, you have already recorded an impact video segment, and it's a wonderful feature on you and Equa's music and life together. But before we get into the town hall event and your new recording Glow, let's go back to May 31st, 1975, Ooh. A day that certainly changed the lives of both of you as you celebrate this 50th year of marriage. Take us back to the ceremony, Ade. What was going on?
Oh, man. You took me back, Doug. Well, we did an African-based ceremony, so we had our families to join together and hold hands. And we both had our African robes on. And I guess we went through a ceremony. The ceremony was relatively quick, but we all held hands and kind of took the vow together as joint families.
Equa, your thoughts on that special day?
Well, I know our mothers bonded over what are they going to do? All our friends will be there. They were, and they became fast friends. They traveled together and everything, which was great because the idea was we're marrying two families. Hmm. And it worked. But my mother did take control of what I was wearing. She said, I don't know what you're doing, but we're going to this person to get. And it was beautiful. And our parents spoke and they went in with apprehensions and they came out, you know, and toasted it for years. Yeah. The toast was to the trip.
Yeah, to the trip.
You know, his cousins all drove down to Chicago. So it was great. And then we had some key people in our life in that early ACM time were present as well. George Lewis, Chico Freeman, and Douglas Ewart were in the ceremony. The parties afterwards were larger with more people, but those people we were and still are close to.
What's great about both of your careers is that they really have merged three cities, Chicago, Newark, and East Orange, all together. And the time at Northwestern was a very special time. That's where you met, right, Equa?
Yes, we met. I grew up in Hyde Park in Chicago and decided to apply to music school after my junior year of high school. Like, okay, I'm done with high school. And I did manage to get in. I was joking with him because in a couple of weeks, one of his pieces will be performed at Oberlin Conservatory and recorded by International Contemporary Ensemble. And I said, you know, I almost went to Oberlin. And I wouldn't have met you. But Oberlin told me, wait till your senior year is over and then come. Northwestern said, come now. The rest is history.
Yeah, it was meant to be. There's no doubt about it. When you think about your career, Steve, and all the great experiences and the great people that you have worked with, it really started back at Northwestern for you. Especially your first year there. There was a traumatic event that took place while you were at Northwestern. Tell us about it.
Oh, yeah. Well, King was assassinated, and about a month later, we, myself and several other people, we got together and we planned how to take over the bursar's office. And so the plans actually held. We had everybody that was in the black community. Basically, there were about 100 students. Well, Northwestern had a student body of about 10,000. So with all four classes together, freshmen, sophomores, juniors, seniors, even grad students, there were only about 100 blacks on the campus. So when King was assassinated and some of the other incidents that had already taken place on the campus, we decided we had to, you know, do something to demonstrate our position. There were a couple of other places that were having student takeovers, but they did it from the president's office. And so that was sort of like a figurehead office as opposed to functioning. So we decided that instead of taking the president's office, we should do something that would really, you know, hurt the school in terms of maintaining their, you know, being open like that. So we said, well, let's do it at the bursar's office, and then we can kind of control the checks going out that will get their attention. And
actually, they were threatened to come in with the well, we did have the National Guard and the state troopers and the local police all converge on the building. But we had one person inside, and he said, well, you know, I have the computer here, and all of the legal documents and all of the transcripts and all of that type of stuff is in this computer. And at that time, there was only one computer. So all the information was localized, and we had it. We had possession of it. So we told the police, do not, you know, crash the building. And also some of the followers of the...
was it the Weathermen?
The Weathermen, yeah.
On campus.
They some of them got out in front of the building and said, well, the police, we're not going to allow the police to come in on you. So it was quite an event. And so we stayed in the building for 3 days, but we finally did get negotiations the way we wanted. And they say it is the most successful takeover of a major institution, educational institution.
I laugh because I said, you know, they said they chose the best and the brightest when they decided they were going to bring in more African Americans. And so they did something different from everybody else.
Yeah,
and isn't it fascinating that not only the music that both of you have performed through the years has had that protest feel to it, you know, in different situations, not everything, but some of the things that you've done, but also you're both educators for life. And who knew at that time, right?
Didn't know. No, I didn't know. But, you know, because I went in as an applied major, piano major. So I was actually on a trajectory to be a classical pianist. And, you know, Northwestern was a feeder school to Chicago Symphony. And at the time, actually, Chicago Symphony was considered number one symphony in the world. So I'm thinking, wow, I'm lined up to maybe deal with the Chicago Symphony. But, you know, my interest was always jazz, you know, performance as opposed to classical. I did transfer into an educational track, and I think that was the best thing for me to do because I didn't actually go to Northwestern to learn more classical music. I was just trying to get the theoretical aspects, you know, for composition and that type of thing. It turned out well for me.
I will say that part of our mother's bonding, you all are going all over the world and taking that child with you. How long can you maintain that? Who has health insurance?
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. But the other part of it is, you know, we enjoy, our day could, you know, be gone, you know, have left teaching, I've retired, but you still have your hand in it. The young people, even now, more so now than ever, really need, you know, the study of the arts. They express themselves through the arts. That's the way the culture has always been. So it's particularly, and I was teaching, we kind of had it like, all right, Ade is going to teach for 10 years in Chicago, you know, and I'm going to teach for 10 years in Jersey. So I pulled out my degree, got the job in Jersey, but it turned into much more where I ended up being the administrator of arts programs in the schools and working with a great team of teachers, artists, and the great Cicely Tyson, who allowed us to name the school after her. She said, only if I can be involved. Well, okay. And so she would, between who I knew and who she knew, which was vast, that became a great experience because you just want to open the kids up, let them understand the history, and, you know, therefore what they might be able to do. So it's important to both of us.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about Glow, the new recording. So many powerful songs, old and new. Glow was something that you wrote, Steve, back in the 60s.
Yeah, I guess around 68 or something like that. And, you know, we played it in our band early in Chicago. We played it sometimes. But then we kind of put it away because we were doing other things. And then Andrew Surreal called me up and said, hey, you want to join this band? So that was tremendous because... Andrew, I think, is one of the great drummers, period. Because I used to listen to the Cecil Taylor recordings. And when Andrew became the drummer in that group, you know, the music kind of, something in the music changed for me. And it just sounded as though he brought all of the different angles together in a way that hadn't been done quite that way. And so when he calls me up, I'm thinking, wow, this is my guy. And he's played with Cecil Taylor. He's played with
Coleman Hawkins.
I mean, you cover the whole spectrum. So calls me up, turns out he's got Hannibal on the trumpet. He's got Oliver Lake on the saxophone, on alto and flutes. And he's got Reggie Workman on the bass. And I'm thinking, oh, these are some of my other heroes. So I was just very fortunate to get the call. But we did that GLOW. We did perform it. I was with them for about 2-3 years.
GLOW is the title of the new recording.
And Hannibal recorded it.
Hannibal recorded. The first one to record it, actually, after we played in the band.
Equal, one of the tunes on the new recording that I know is an emotional one for you is Atrocities. You want to tell us a little bit about the origins of Atrocities?
Well, what can I say? Look around you. Yeah. It just becomes so apparent, and our great artists always say, Amiri Baraka was a good friend of ours, Toni Morris, you know, they say, the artists get busy when things need, you know, to be reconciled. But, you know, the words just, the lyrics come from observing what's going on and feeling the need to make a statement. And people have reacted, you know, to that piece of music with given affirmations that, you know, they love the fact that we're saying it like it is.
We try to lift those who suffer. But when it comes right back again, thoughts and prayers don't change the game. Can you list each murdered name?
Yeah, that hit me right away. Mm-hmm. As soon as I heard that, that was definitely a powerful statement. Steve, you mentioned in the video that I was talking about, in that Impact video, I believe, how some people get the message in jazz through the lyrics, but when it's just instrumental, people can take a couple of different ways to interpret what the music means to them. That's a special part of jazz, right?
Yes, yes. Well, the arts allow your imagination to be a part of the product. So it's kind of, it entices you to think about things. And in the song that you were talking about, Atrocities, I remember hearing it the first time that Equa started singing it, and I was like, I kind of got hit with the same thing. You know, the images that come to mind as somebody's saying a poem or singing the words, and if they leave space, then your consciousness starts to be involved as well. So then your memories or your encounters with different situations, they come forward, you know, in your thinking. So for me, that song was, it's sort of a meditation as well. You can kind of meditate as you think about it, because the ideas they come to you, like what Equa is saying. Sometimes Equa is just saying something to me, or I'm watching something on TV, or, you know, have a conversation or listening to somebody else's music, and something in there sparks an idea, and next thing you know, you're like, oh, I'm working on this song. Well, how did it start? I don't know. I heard these birds outside chirping, and I just, you know. So it's always coming from somewhere where you wouldn't expect.
But without the word, without lyrics, you know, you're still evoking feelings. And I mean, it's music. All of the arts are important. I can, you know, I do stick figures as far as visual art. He can do visual art. But I've done theater, dance, and of course, music. And the artist puts a lot of themselves into it with whatever training they may or may not have had. And they're sharing with audiences and, you know, hoping that it touches them in a significant way.
So you've already had a recording that you did with Tanya Leone. Now, this will be a live event at the Town Hall, so that will be something special. Does she mean something to you? I mean, all the accolades and being an educator as well, Equa, to sit down and have a conversation with her and talk about your lives together and your music. That has to be also extremely important to you.
It's fabulous. And, you know, the thing is, Tanya told us when we saw her, I hadn't seen her in several years. Tanya used to come to Cicely Tyson School with Miss Tyson and Arthur Mitchell. Because she, you know, when she got in New York, I don't know exactly the chronology, but she ended up working at Dance Theater of Harlem. And so Cicely and Arthur were very close. So among the many people she brought to the school, they were regulars. But I never discussed my art with the various people who came there. You know, we had conversations, but it was all about what was going on in the school and the work we were doing with the young people. So when we saw her again at an event, she says, oh, you too, I'd like to do something with you. And we're going, you know, George has been involved with her. Henry Threadgill has been involved with her. I think he was or is on her board. And so the association is there with some of our closest colleagues. But when she said that, it became, and she also mentioned to me at that time something I didn't know. She considered Cicely a mentor because she had come from Cuba and, you know, was getting acclimated to the whole New York scene.
Equa, thanks for reaching out to me, by the way.
Absolutely. As far as we're concerned, we've had a couple of positive experiences with you over the years.
Oh, yeah.
Listen to your work. So I was just hoping that you might be interested and available. So luck was on my side.
When it's the Colsons, I'm available. Thank you, Steve, so much. And congratulations. And really enjoy the March 27th event. It will be something special.
All right. Thanks a lot, Doug.
Thank you.
Appreciate you.
You can see my entire interview with the Colsons on the WBGO YouTube channel. You're listening to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Last week, we brought you a report on the storied piano once owned at the Village Gate nightclub and now gracing the bandstand of a Westport, Connecticut jazz venue. This week, WBGO's John Kalish reports on the nonprofit bringing world-class jazz acts to a VFW hall in Westport.
The key figure in Westport's growing jazz scene is Greg Wall, an Orthodox rabbi who also happens to be a professional jazz musician. Here's Wall playing saxophone with his band Later Prophets on a 2009 album titled The Cook Project, released on the Tzadik label. Wall has juggled his job as a rabbi at a Westport synagogue with weekly performances in a bar at a local restaurant. One night, Eric Bibler's wife and daughter stumbled onto the jazz scene at the bar.
My wife went to pick up my daughter at the train station, And she didn't come home. I called her up. I said, hey, where are you? How long does it take to get from the train station? And she said, oh, I should have called you. We were driving home, and my daughter Zena, as they were driving by the bar, looked in the window and saw someone playing stand-up bass and said, hey, Mom, we got to check this out. So they walked in, and they just had such a great time that they stayed until the last set, and that was it.
Bibler went to the bar with his wife the following week, and they've been regulars at the weekly jazz shows ever since. The jazz performances relocated to VFW Post 399 in Westport after a hiatus during the COVID pandemic. The VFW Post has seen a declining membership in recent years, and the Jazz at the Post gigs have brought a source of revenue to the venue. Eric Bibler co-founded the Jazz Society of Fairfield County with Greg Wall and is now a member of its board. Wall serves as the Society's artistic director.
Part of our mission is to present free or low-cost concerts of world-class professional jazz artists. And we keep the ticket prices very low. The cover here is $20, although we have a special price for students and also for veterans. We keep the price really low. And then we can guilt the audience into donating to support our outreach program, which is called Jazz Reach.
Jazz Reach arranges live performances at libraries, community centers, and assisted living facilities. Well-known jazz performers go to local schools for concerts and workshops. The Jazz Society has also established a scholarship for Fairfield County students to study music in college or at a conservatory. The night I visited the VFW Hall in late February, pianist Ted Rosenthal performed with a quintet, and the venue was standing room only. The Jazz Society's Eric Bibler says he likes that the Jazz at the Post audience comes to listen.
Over time, the audience has grown steadily. We used to feel like it was a success if we could get 25 people. And now we're regularly selling out. We have a capacity of approximately 80. Maybe we can squeeze 90 people in. But for us, a slow night is probably 50.
David Hazeltine plays here, and Steve Davis, and James Wideman, and Dave Kukoski, Paul Ballenbeck, Amina Figueroa. I mean, all sorts of great players.
Again, saxophonist Greg Wall.
The people that I would go out and listen to in New York, well, they come to Westport, and most of the groups that play here, if you hear them play in Manhattan, same music, same people, the cover charge would be $50, plus two-drink minimum. I feel a little guilty that this place is 2 minutes from my house, but so be it.
My name is Alan Phillips. I live in Westport. Coming to the VFW in Westport each week is like being in Greenwich Village, that kind of world-class jazz that we get. Great acoustics. I try to bring different people each time I come here, and they come and they bring other people. It's an incredible venue. And incredible jazz right here in town. It's the best kept secret.
The Jazz at the Post shows take place every Thursday night at 7:30. The VFW Hall is walking distance from Westport's Metro North train station. Rabbi Greg Wall will not be on the bandstand for the April 2nd and April 9th performances due to the Passover holiday. For the WBGO Journal, I'm John Kalish.
Thanks for listening to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Join us next Saturday morning at 5:30 for another edition of the award-winning WBGO Journal. In the meantime, stay tuned to the world's greatest jazz and blues station, WBGO and WBGO.org.
Hey.